Welcome to Puentes, Bridges to the Community. Hello, I'm your host, Emily Guerra. My guest on this edition is New Mexico State University Associate Professor of Spanish in the Department of Languages and Linguistics, Dr. Spencer R. Herrera. He recently co-authored a book, Sagrado, of Photo Poetics Across the Chicano Homeland. It's the story of a cruise through the United States Southwest by two professors and a photographer artist. Thank you for joining me on Puentes.
Thank you for having me and inviting me to be here with you today.
Let's learn a little bit about your personal background, where you studied.
Well, I'm originally from Houston, born and raised in Houston, Texas, and stayed there till mid-20s. And I eventually decided to go back to school for my master's. I worked in the business world for a number of years, and I realized that it wasn't quite for me, that I was missing something in my life, and that something was sort of the continuation of my education. And I decided to pursue my master's first at the University of Houston, and then I moved to New Mexico, where I started my PhD in Spanish, specifically Chicano literature, at the University of New Mexico in Albuquerque. And I've been here ever since.
And had you written a book before?
No. I guess at that age, I really hadn't thought about becoming a writer or pursuing becoming an author. I was definitely interested in learning more about literature. I was kind of behind the curve in that sense. Starting my master's, not really being a person who studied literature in undergraduate, I was really more political science and Spanish. But when I started my master's, I was fortunate to work with a professor at the University of Houston by the name of Dr. Nicolas Canelos, and he founded Arte Público Press and the U.S. Recovery Project that focuses on Latino literature of the United States. And under his guidance, I learned a lot more about our history and culture and literature in the United States. And it's then I began to read a lot more about the literature produced in this country by Latinos, specifically by Mexican Americans, Chicanos. And it wasn't until much later that I thought about writing, but I think I always had the stories. But they weren't necessarily my stories. I came from a family from a lot of storytellers and people who just love to tell jokes and talk. And I think that that tradition clinged to me. And fortunately, I was able to transfer it to the written word and use that sort of storytelling method in my essays.
With this book, you've bridged a lot of different areas. So when did that idea, that passion to write this book come about, and how did you find your co-authors?
Well, when I first moved to Las Cruces back in 2006, it wasn't too much long after that when I met Robert Kaiser. Robert Kaiser is the photographer of this book, and he was working at the farmer's market at the time. He had just moved here like I did, and he basically likes to work on his own. He's a freelance photographer, and he was selling his photographs there at the farmer's market on a Wednesday. I went there to look at an exhibit at the Brannigan Cultural Center, and I happened to run across the farmer's market that day. I didn't know it existed. And I saw his photographs, and they were just brilliant, every single one of them. And he was so close to the subjects. The color was so vibrant. And the first question I asked him, which was, I think, the first question many people asked him, was, did you take these pictures? Because they're so good. And he said, yes, I took them, and I was just looking at them, and then I went back and studied them some more. And then at one point, soon after, I asked him, would you like to work on a project with me? I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do at the time, 100%, but then we had a conversation, and I said, you know, I want to document Chicano culture. And I wasn't quite sure what that was myself, what I wanted to document. I just knew that I wanted him to take the photographs. One of the things about Robert's work, other than getting so close to subjects, is that he exclusively uses 35mm film. Today, almost all of us are digital. With film, you really have to know your subjects. You have to understand, you have to know your camera. You can't waste film because it's so expensive. And you can't waste a moment either. And so we talked, and little by little, I started to sort of make a list, a mental list, if you will, of things that I wanted to document. And at that time, the sort of border rhetoric was at a very fast pace, and it was very prominent in the news, like it is today in a different sense. But the building of fences and immigration laws and INS. And so we really started at the border. One of the things I tell my students is that you can sort of slow down people, but you really can't stop the flow of culture. You can put up fences, you can put up walls, you can make new laws, but culture finds a way to go through all that. And so we started at the border. We went to Juarez many times. We went to Paloma several times. And we wanted to show that despite these new walls and laws and fences and those sort of things, that culture still made its way through back and forth, both directions. It's fluid. We also went to a family reunion of my wife's in Coahuila, and where people from all over the United States and Mexico go to every 4th of July to return to their small little bitty rancho, the little ranch, and celebrate their family, celebrate where they come from. Now they come from Chicago and Florida and New Mexico and California and other places in Mexico. So we want to start at the border and just kind of watch how that interaction is. And then from there, we moved to Tortugas. We went to document the pilgrimage to a mountain. And it just took off from there. We just started saying, let's go see this. Let's go to California. And sometimes we had a plan and we wanted to document something specific, like the green chili harvest. Other times, let's say, let's just go drive to so-and-so place and find out what's there. And more times than not, it often worked out really well. And then so about almost halfway into it, we had quite a bit of work. We had quite a bit of photographs. I was starting to develop my ideas. They're a little more academic at that time than they come out in the book. I wanted to be more available to an everyday reader, which they are now. But we kind of hit a spot where we weren't progressing. And so I talked to my friend Levi Romero. Levi is the New Mexico Centennial Poet Laureate. And I've known him since I was at UNM. And he's a wonderful poet. And so I invited him to join us. And the idea was for him to write poetry based on our experiences, not about necessarily what Robert took a picture of, but our experiences, and for Robert to take pictures of whatever he wants to take a picture of, and for me to write the essays. And the essays really, for the most part, about my life growing up Chicano and learning about what that meant. And they really dovetail together really well. You know, I kind of call it like a braid of hair where these three big strands come together and reinforce each other. And they all have their own place, and it worked out really well. And so that's kind of how the book came about, the process. And then we just started putting everything down in order and making sense of it.
And what does Chicano mean to you?
Well, in its most basic sense, there's the idea that it's a person of Mexican origin, right? But really, when you look at the term, it's more complex than that. It's a person of Mexican origin who realizes that they've lost some things along the way, and now they're trying to recuperate those things. So it's a person who's developing a consciousness of who they are, a linguistic consciousness, a historical consciousness, political consciousness, cultural, a number of those issues that as you're growing up, you ask yourself, well, why don't I speak Spanish like my parents or grandparents? And then you learn the stories of that they weren't allowed to speak Spanish, so you learn about that. You look in the history books and you see, well, and growing up in Texas, we learned about the Alamo, right? But we didn't learn about Juan Seguin and who was he. We didn't learn about the Tejano heroes who were also at the Alamo defending the Alamo for the Texan side. And so all those things you want to uncover and unravel and realize that there's more complex issues behind the history we've been taught. And so that's part of the recovery process, if you will. And then the political and the cultural, just trying to figure out who you are through all those elements. I mean, we're going to celebrate July 4th here. Well, what is Cinco de Mayo, right? A lot of people celebrate that on a sort of a festive level, but we don't understand the history behind that. We're miles from the Gadsden Purchase, and yet people don't really understand what that is. And we have a high school that's called Gadsden High School. And so all these things that are around us, but maybe we don't know the history behind them. And so being Chicano is not just being Mexican-American, but recovering all those things that were lost to you somewhere along the way, and also embracing the complexity behind your heritage, right? Yeah, you might have a Spanish surname and you speak Spanish, but you also have indigenous roots. And it's important to try to understand where those roots lead to. So there's a number of things that being Chicano entails, and it's more complex than being Mexican-American. And I think that's one of the things I really enjoy about teaching Chicano literature, Chicano studies, is that our students, they love the material because for the first time, they're finding out in an academic sense who they are. I think many of them know through their parents and grandparents, but now they're bridging those two worlds, the family and the cultural and the community with the academic, and they're really gaining a sense of who they are, and it's empowering.
Have you found in your Chicano studies that at one time, Chicano, the word, was very derogatory?
Yeah, it's funny because one of the first things we do is one of my students, we go around and what do these words mean to you without me telling them what I think they mean. So we look at Mexican and Mexicano and Chicano and American, even words like Latino or Pocho. What have you heard of these words? Have you used these words? In what context? And I had a student tell me that years ago when she was so curious, she had heard the term Chicano and she asked her mom what it meant and her mom slapped her. Right. It was this sort of nasty word and you weren't supposed to use it, especially in reference to yourself. And so I think there's a lot of misinformation out there. And so once people learn about the term and the history behind it and all these wonderful people who have done all these great things along the way, other than, you know, your top five, Dolores Huerta and Cesar Chavez, the other people out there who constantly are doing these things to make the community what it is. When you learn about these people and your heroes, like in the book I write about, there's a section on heroes, and we talk about everyday heroes, and we talk about people who also deserve more recognition, like Luis Valdez or Sandra Cisneros, people of that nature. When you learn about these people and the things they've done, you realize being Chicano is something that we should be proud of. Being Chicano, being Chicana, it's a thing of beauty, really. And so when you look at the book and you look at the pictures and you read the poetry and the essays, and one of the ideas was to sort of represent people who normally don't get representation, or at least in a positive way. And so we have heard stories from several people who we've never met before, who are just working folk, and they say, I love this book. That's my people. That's me. And so they're getting their story in a place that they normally don't get a story, and that's in a book that is published by University Press, in this case, University of New Mexico Press. And that way, it's something they can be proud of. And we were proud of the work we did, but people are proud because they see themselves in a positive fashion.
And you've memorialized some of these people, like Johnny Flores. He's our local mariachi from Mesilla, Las Cruces, and he's performed for many, many years.
Yeah, he's got a wonderful picture in there. Robert took all the pictures, and some of them are in the moment, which even shows Robert's brilliance. It even shows it in more detail. And so others, Robert met with them and talked with them and sort of set the scene, if you will. And Johnny Flores was always at the farmer's market, as many other places. I've seen him several times during the week. So once you get to learn his story and to learn his background and that his work has even been presented in the Smithsonian and all these different songs and all these, I think, over 17 different instruments that he plays, he's not just a guy who can sing a mariachi song. He's a very talented and well-versed musician. And we were just happy to get to know him, but his picture, it's stoic. It's just him holding that guitar as if his life depended on it. And so he's still around. But yes, in a sense, it is sort of a memorial. It's remembering people who oftentimes we see, but we don't necessarily pay attention to, and yet we should, because their stories are so rich.
Well, that's what photography is, catching that moment and memorializing it. But at the same time, you've added poetry to it with Levi Romero. What poems are really touching to you?
Well, there's quite a few. I think one of the things that Levi does, similar to what Robert does, and I think I do, is they're personal, yet other people can relate to them. What we try to do is in this book is we have a section, we had different chapters showing different aspects of Chicano culture and identity and life, but also in a sense, the life cycle, if you will, when it refers to culture. So we start at the border. We look at the border and sort of the birth, the clash of these two cultures. And we go along and we look at heroes. We go along, we look at religious icons and practices. But we also have a section later on death. I mean, it's a part of life. And there's a beautiful ceremony. We went to a funeral, Charriada funeral. And all these people showed up for the funeral of Don Omar Castro. They came from Texas, Arizona, Chihuahua. And these men and women showed up in full Charriada regalia on a weekday to honor this man's life and legacy. And that was beautiful. And so some of Levi's poetry don't necessarily deal with that particular instance, but they deal with how death has touched his life and his family in specific instances, and yet how he still maintains a relationship with those people through their stories. And so it's remembering them. And so in one of the poems, I believe it talks about how no one is gone as long as you remember their name. And so I think that's what's touching about his poetry is he's constantly remembering people's names and their stories and their dichos, the things they used to say. and it brings them to life, and it helps us remember them. And I think that's one of the things that's very touching about Levi's poetry.
Is that how you came about the title of the book, Sagrado, Sacred?
You know, we had a different title before, and it was kind of in reference to Tomás Rivera's Y No Saluto La Tierra. It was Y Cuando Lleguemos, and it was this, once again, the idea of return, when we return. And we used it as a separate chapter title instead, Cuando Lleguemos, when we arrive, because Levi suggested a different title, and he's the one that suggested Sagrado, a photo poetics across the Chicano homeland. And as we define Sagrado in the book, specifically how Levi defines it, is when two or more gather in the name of community. And so whether you are at Mass or eating afterwards in the parish hall, you know, by a meal prepared by Las Guadalupanas, or whether you are at an event for a lowrider show, or you're at a party and the kids are in a circle breaking the piñata and everybody's singing the, you know, a piñata song, whatever the case may be, if you're together gathered in the name of community, that's where we define sagrado, sacredness, right? Because today it's so easy to get away from the idea of community and family and cultural identity. And so for these people who work so hard to maintain that in our lives, it's a sacred space and a sacred moment. It doesn't have to be in a church. It could be somewhere simple in a park or even in a cantina. Who knows? But that's how we define it. And it does kind of have, for Levi, there was a religious context, underlining context, if you will, of where two or more gather in the name of, in this case, community.
Well, you talked earlier about people in the book that have come to you and are so happy that you've had them in there. What else has really touched you about how people receive this book?
I think there have been several people who have been on this journey with us almost since day one. And all our cases were married, and so our wives have kind of had to deal with the road trips and the work that has to do with Sagrado. And they've heard the stories when we come back and the people that we met, and then their feedback and their ideas. And so that's special to have that relationship and that support, right, to undertake a project that takes, you know, 6 to 7 years from beginning to actual production. And then some other people who we met whose pictures are in the book and whose stories are in the book, and then they followed up with us and say, well, how's it going, right? When's it coming out? And you can just hear their excitement in their voice. One person that comes to mind is Robert Verdosa. His picture's in the book, and we went to Casa Grande, Arizona to work with him. And he's been down to Las Cruces several times to presentations and things of that nature. And he remakes old cars and fixes them up beautifully. And so he has a shot in the book where he's in the car, and he has that sort of old doo-wop look. He combs his hair back. He wears the white T-shirts rolled up, sleeves rolled up, and old Levi jeans. And he's just got this great look. And so he was in his car, and it was getting kind of dark and dusk. And he said, do you want to see me shoot flames out from the back of my car? And we're like, sure. And so Robert caught that instant when the flames did shoot out. And so it's just moments like that where we meet with people, and it's not just we take their picture. We get to work with them and travel with them and ride along with them and learn their stories. There's another couple, a lowriding couple, Justa and Julian from Santa Fe. And we happened to run across them just by luck. And then we met with them months later to basically follow them around and see how they do things in Santa Fe as they're cruising. And so, once again, beautiful stories, beautiful car, take a wonderful picture. Justa gets all dressed up and she's beautiful. And Julian is wearing the white muscle T-shirt with no smile, you know, and of course his mother-in-law tells him, smile, Julian, you know, for the picture, but that's not him. So he keeps that dead aim stare. And it's just a beautiful picture. And then they followed up and they went to a presentation later when we introduced the book in Albuquerque. And so just to have these people who not only had their pictures taken and their stories recorded in a sense, but they're once again just so anxious to see the book, to see themselves in a book, because they're so proud to be part of something. And likewise, we're proud to have them as part of the book.
Well, it's a nice book to have in your library as well. Where can we get the book? And also, are you planning a new book?
The book is available through University of New Mexico Press. So you can always go to their website. You can always go to any major online bookseller. It is available at the NMSU Barnes & Noble bookstore. It has been at COAS. I don't know if they've run out. but it's at quite a few bookstores, but typically online, or if not, the NMSU Barnes & Noble. If not, they can always contact me in the Department of Language and Linguistics, and I'll be happy to point them in the right direction. And as far as future projects, that's always the question, right? What are you working on next? We're so happy that this book came out. We are working on a project. We've talked about some more group projects. Collaborative work is so rich, and there's so many great things that come out of it. At the same time, to have three artists working together, you have to be on the same page for a long period of time, and that's not always easy because our careers take us in different places.
And your families.
And our families and so many other things. But we are all working on something. At the same time, I'm working on a new book, a book of stories, but it's just getting started, so I don't get too excited about anything until it's close to finish, but I am writing.
So the book is never going to be lost, even though there's ebooks, but the actual physical book, to have it in your hands, how do you feel about that?
You know, it reminds me of one of my favorite authors, Richard Rodriguez. He's written many books, Hunger of Memory, but when he talks about when you feel it, a weight in your hands, right? There is an ebook, but the ebook's not the same. To hold the book, and actually it's kind of funny because we went to Levi lives in Albuquerque, and Robert lives in Tucson now, but he was here in Las Cruces. And when the books came in, Levi picked them up from the warehouse at UNM, and we met in Socorro. We met at El Matador Lounge, which is, you know, right there on the main drag. We had the boxes. We opened them at the same time, and we just held them and looked at them and smiled. And there was a few guys at the bar, and Robert was so happy and proud. He went over and showed the book to complete strangers, and we each got, I don't know, 7 or 8 copies. And he wound up selling a book to one of the guys right then and there because the other guy was so excited that we were so excited. And we said, how much is the book? And we said, well, according to our contract, we can't sell it for less than retail, so it's $30. And he only had like 16, so he has to borrow 14 from some other guy at the bar. And it was just kind of a funny story because here's this guy who wants the book, but it's $14 short. But someone lent it to him, and he bought the book, and we all signed it. So literally within minutes, we had, you know, a quick sale, and we all autographed it for this guy at a bar in El Matador Lounge in Socorro, New Mexico.
Well, we could keep going on and talking about all kinds of stories. You have so many stories to tell. Thank you again for joining me on Puentes with New Mexico University Associate Professor of Spanish, Dr. Spencer R. Herrera. Muchas gracias.
A usted.
For KRWG, I'm Emily Guerra.